10 years ago, I was trying to follow the arguments in the Supreme Court case, Citizens United. Remember Theodore Olson?
Robust debate about candidates for elective office is the most fundamental value protected by the First Amendment's guarantee of free speech. Yet that is precisely the dialogue that the government has prohibited if practiced by unions or corporations, any union or any corporation.
My next guest is, in fact, a former chairman of the Federal Election Commission. He was there 10 years ago when the decision from the Supreme Court was handed down, Citizens United. He's a partner at a law firm in D.C., and I'll give that law firm proper attribution in just a few minutes after I practice a couple of the names. Reading from my guest's piece before we bring him on the air, I found this at realclearpolitics.com. An old adage credited to Mark Twain holds that you should get the facts first and then distort them as you please. The cynical advice comes to mind when reading the sprawling controversial election bill called For the People's Act of 2021, especially its entire section aimed at the Supreme Court's much maligned Citizens United versus FEC ruling, which struck down the ban on corporations making independent political communications more than a decade ago. I was chair of the FEC when this took place. The bill, which passed the House on a party-line vote and is now in the Senate, calls for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. We welcome Matthew Peterson, former chairman of the Federal Election Commission, to WLS. Reading from your piece, Matthew, but if we stick with the facts, we can see some major upsides to Citizens United. Would you please elaborate, sir?
Sure. Well, thanks, first of all, for having me on your show, John. I wrote the article to provide readers an opportunity to look at the Citizens United decision through fresh eyes. It goes without saying that the Supreme Court Citizens United opinion is without question one of the most criticized legal decisions in recent memory. And it became a lightning rod for controversy as soon as the ink dried on its pages. And so I thought it would be a worthwhile exercise to contrast some of the dire outcomes that many in the political and media worlds predicted would result from the opinion versus what the decision's real-world impact actually has been. And then to consider whether the conventional wisdom about the decision has been off base. Some of the alarmist predictions about the decision were that dollars were going to flow from mega corporations that would dominate politics, that elected offices would be auctioned off to the highest bidders, and that in general, our election system would become hopelessly corrupted. And what my piece tries to do is look at what's really happened, because when we look at, what's resulted in the aftermath of the Citizens United decision, for instance, the higher voter turnout rates, fewer public corruption cases, a remarkable amount of political competitiveness between the two major parties, I think it becomes quickly apparent that Citizens United's its legacy is far more complicated and frankly far more interesting than the caricature that's often been portrayed.
Matthew Peterson is here, former FEC chairman. So let's take him piece by piece. The contention was that powerful businesses and mega billionaires would dominate the election. So whether it was George Soros or the Koch brothers, has that materialized, yes or no?
So wealthy individuals have been able to contribute. Well, I should back up. Wealthy individuals have always been able to, even since the Buckley v. Vallejo decision back in the 1970s, where the Supreme Court kind of laid out the modern political underpinnings for our campaign finance system. Wealthy individuals have been able to spend as much of their own money on political speech as they want to. Citizens United enabled them to pool resources to an extent that they hadn't before. But the question of whether big companies have started spending in connection with federal elections has largely not materialized. When you stop and really think about it, it makes a lot of sense. For-profit corporations, they're interested in maintaining their bottom line, keeping their customers and investors happy. So getting neck deep in politics is probably not the best formula.
Exactly. It's self-policing. It's essentially self-policing, yeah, because you're going to lose half your customer base just based on the demographics politically of the nation.
That's correct. You know, yeah. So Citizens United gave corporations the ability to engage in direct campaign activity, and the vast majority of them have said no thank you.
The other thing, they said it would suppress the vote. Clearly, based on the statistics from 2020, we had huge voter turnout. So 10 years after Citizens United, that prophecy has turned out to be untrue.
That's correct. In 2020, the voter turnout was nearly 67%, which is the highest in 120 years. And that follows the 2018 midterm election, which saw the highest turnout for a midterm in over a century and was about 10% higher than it had been 10 years earlier. Yeah. So, you know, while it is the case that oftentimes the deluge of information and negative ads that we get bombarded with during the election season, sometimes that can feel a little bit overwhelming and some may not like it. Perhaps that actually helps boost voter involvement by providing, you know, useful information to voters and getting them more engaged in the election process. So in that regard, Citizens United may actually be helping get more people invested in the election system.
Final category, Mr. Peterson. I heard from every Democrat I know, and to this day, they say that Citizens United is a political windfall for Republicans. Has that proven to be true?
It actually has not, and that was a prediction right from the outset, that this decision was going to put a thumb on the scale for Republicans. And I think what we've seen is that that the party that doesn't control the White House has enjoyed an outside spending advantage. So in the immediate aftermath of Citizens United, when the Democrats still controlled the White House, when Barack Obama was still president, the Republicans saw an advantage in outside spending during election contests. However, when Donald Trump was elected to be president, we saw that advantage flip. In the most recent election cycle, for example, the Democrats outspent Republicans in terms of outside spending by $300 million. So I think that what we're seeing is that the party that doesn't control the White House seems to have a bit of an enthusiasm gap, and that their donors are very tantalized by the prospect of regaining power and open their wallets.
I would like everybody who is currently not in power, when you want to regain power, to use your wallets as opposed to bear spray and the sacking of the Capitol. That's what I'm urging.
Yes.
Mr. Peterson, thank you very much for your time. I urge everybody to read your piece. We're going to put it up on our social media platforms, and have a great weekend, sir.
You do the same. Thanks for having me on your show.
Could they, in your view, in the view that you're putting forth, that there is no distinction between an individual and a corporation for First Amendment purposes, then any mega corporation, even if most of the investors are from abroad, Congress could not limit their spending?
I'm not saying that, Justice Ginsburg. I'm saying that the First Amendment applies. Then the next step is to determine whether Congress and the government has established a compelling governmental interest and a narrowly tailored remedy to that interest.
From 10 years ago, that is Justice Ginsburg and Theodore Olson, who was the attorney for Citizens United. I urge you to read Matthew Peterson's piece on this. It is at realclearpolitics.com. Also, we'll put it up on our socials. He is the former chairman of the Federal Election Commission and is a partner at, here we go, Holtzman, Vogel, Barron, Torchinsky, and Josefiak. Thank you.